Well, Gail is on. Hi, Gail. And then our investment people doing their presentations, are we contacting them or do we expect them to be here now?
I believe Annette's here right now.
Cool. Hi, Annette.
I'm here. Hello.
Hi. All right. At 1:31, I would like to call this meeting to order on December 18th, 2023 of the Self-Insured Risk Trust Fund Board of Trustees. Virtual meeting beginning now, call to order. Let me establish a quorum. Keith Domer, Chair, is present. Ted Moeller, Trustee.
Present.
Michael Hanley, Trustee.
I'm present.
Michael. And Angel, I'm never sure how to say your name. Ozuemelan?
Ozemalum, I'm here.
Okay, Ozemalum. All right, present. I believe we have a quorum. That's one vacant spot, so we have four attending. I will say we have a quorum established. It's customary in our trust fund board meetings to have introductions. I would like to, let's go in kind of a reasonable order where the trustees go first and introduce themselves. Then we'll maybe have the department staff that are here introduce themselves. And then maybe the people that assist us with our work that we do, like our actuary and our investment advisor, do their introductions. And then anyone that's left over after that that's here that wants to be introduced, we can do it that way. Does that sound fine with everyone? So I'm Keith Domer, Chair of the Self-Insured Risk Trust Fund Board of Trustees, in my second term and enjoying fulfilling my responsibilities. Anyone else? Michael?
I'm Mike Hanley. I was retired past president and chairman of Bank of Tucson, and I've been a banker in Tucson for 50 years and on numerous boards as we speak.
Thank you. I guess I should say, let's see, I'm a retired CPA. I taught at the university. I was a state auditor for almost 30 years, and then I was Pima County's finance director. I'm on several county and city boards right now also. So if you wanted to know a little more about me. Ted.
I'm Ted Moeller. I'm a trustee. I'm an Arizona workers' compensation specialist. I defend insurance companies and employers throughout the state, including some of the biggest, probably the biggest employers in Tucson now.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Angel Ozemelum. I am currently the business services slash finance director for the city of Tucson. I've been in my position for a little over 7 months. I wish I could have said 7 years, but 7 months. I am a certified public accountant. I am a chartered global management accountant. I have over 30 years of service of experience in accounting, auditing, governmental accounting. What else? I've worked in several executive level positions, including in higher education. I'm happy to be here and to serve the community of Tucson.
Thank you. Now, our excellent support from the department. If we want to go through those people with their introductions, that would be great. Can I let you just step in and go down the list?
Good
Hi, I'm
morning.
Vince Tracy.
Go
I'm
ahead.
the Safety and Health Loss Control Manager. Been with the city for 5 years now. I have about 20 years experience in occupational safety and health and 15 years experience in public safety law enforcement.
Hi, Vince.
How you doing, Keith?
Good, really good.
I'll go next. Good morning. My name is Martha Castro. I'm the liability claims manager for the city of Tucson for a year and a half. Prior to that, I was just a claims adjuster. I've been here since 2014, and prior to that, have been doing claims pretty much all my life. Welcome. I mean, sorry. Glad to be here.
Thank you, Martha.
Hi, I'm Sarah Hesick, the Workers' Compensation Claims Manager. I've been with the City of Tucson for 8 years and have been working in the work comp industry for the last 16. I also have Noemi Mills that is joining us, and she works with us as the analyst of our workers' compensation program.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Vivian Neuscheller. I am the Deputy Director of Business Services. I've been with the city for, I'm going on 19 years, end of this month. Wow, that's a lot of years. I've served in roles when I started with the city as an accountant, moved into the budget area as an administrator. So worked the budget for almost 6 years, and then promoted into deputy director role in 2021. So I've been here for quite some time, been through a lot of back in the days when we had a large deficit in the general fund, and we've done a great job of coming out of that, as you all may be aware. And so look forward to attending these meetings and presenting on the financials.
Great, Vivian.
Thank you.
Anyone else on the county, on the city side? I apologize, on the city side?
I'll introduce myself. I'm Michelle Saavedra, and I'm the principal assistant city attorney. I'm the attorney assigned for this board, and I'm also the lead attorney in our internal litigation unit. So we work very closely with risk management on all of the lawsuits. And I'm here to make sure that we comply with open meetings law.
So. Thank you. And of course, I think I've met everyone or worked with everyone in some capacity. So I'm the new management assistant here with risk management, taking over Joanna Velasquez's role as the board secretary. So I'm happy to learn and see what's going on and reach out to everyone and keep us all going here.
Thank you, Veronica. All right, did we miss anyone from the city? How about our wonderful consultants and advisors then? Who do we have here helping us get our job done today?
Hi, everyone. I am Annette Gastone with PFM Asset Management. We are the investment advisor for the city's self-insurance risk trust fund, in addition to other various portfolios that we manage on behalf of the city. And I've been with PFM Asset Management for 6 years now, but have been in the financial realm working with local governments for going on 17 years.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Trevor Steck. I'm with the Mahoney Group, and I am the insurance consultant for the city since 2019. I'd get into a lot of details, but I'll keep it short and sweet.
Thank you.
And being last, I'm Gail Flannery. I'm an actuary with AMI Risk Consultants. I'm out of Miami. We've been working with the city for the past 10 years, and we've worked with public self-insurance programs for 30 years. And we're fellows of the Casualty Actuarial Society and members of the American Academy, which means we can do this work.
All right. Thank you, Gail. And thank everyone. Did we miss anyone? All right. Item 2A on the agenda after introductions is the appointment of Allie Miller as new board member set for January 9th, 2024. Did someone want to briefly discuss that? Or is that all we need to know, that wonderful Allie Miller will be joining us as a trustee on the board beginning next month?
Yes, Ali Matthews will be joining us on the board once her appointment is approved by the mayor and council.
All right, item 2B, board trustee terms. We didn't get an attachment to be included on here from the, I don't remember which department was supposed to provide that to us, but
clerk's office.
Pardon?
The clerk's office.
the clerk's office. I know that my term, my second term runs through January of 2026. Ted Moeller's term runs through September of 25. Michael Hanley's term runs through March of 24. I'm not exactly sure how Angel's term runs for her entire stay as the finance director, I guess, or as the. So there will be no expiration. And is that correct? Or how does that work? Do we know? We don't need to know right now, but. And then that's our four trustees right now, with Allie Miller joining us January of 2024. Is there anything else we needed to cover on that agenda item for informational purposes? All right, let's move on to agenda item three, an action item, approval of minutes. I would like to entertain a motion at this point for approval of the March 17, 2023 special meeting, virtual meeting of the Self-Insured Risk Trust Fund Board of Trustees.
I move approval, Michael Hanley.
We have a motion to approve the March 17, 2023 meeting from Michael Hanley. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ted Moeller. I think Ted was first, so we'll take Ted Moeller as the second on the motion. So for the motion to approve the March 17, 2023 meetings, do we have any discussion about that motion? I am not hearing any discussion, so I'm going to close the discussion now according to step five. I would like all those in favor of the motion to say aye right now.
Aye.
Are there any opposed to the motion? I'm not hearing any votes opposed to the motion. I'm going to declare that the motion passed. The ayes have it. The motion is adopted, and we need to record that in the minutes. All right. Agenda item four, financial statements. Vivian has a presentation for us. I'd like to let Vivian take that away.
So I don't have the presentation in front of me. Veronica, will you be running the slides for us?
Yes, I'm gonna open it up right now.
Okay.
Okay, let me share my screen.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Can you see it?
Yep.
Let me.
Okay. All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the board. It's my understanding that these are shared with you before these board meetings. So I do want to start with a presentation of the ACFR financial statements. So as you know, the city prepares an annual comprehensive or annual financial comprehensive report each year. So what I have in front of you now are unaudited financial statements, as we haven't completed the report. So I wanted to at least have the unaudited version for you, meaning that our independent auditors are in the process currently of reviewing our financials. So let me quickly go through the first financial statement is the changes of net position for the risk management fund. The good news is that at the end of this fiscal year, we are going to see a positive net position in the fund. At the end of fiscal year 22, we did end the year with a negative $1.3 million. Now we're up to, if you look at the second snapshot here, we're up to almost $12.4 million, which is great. And what we did was during the fiscal year in 23, we went ahead and increased our charges to the departments based on information that we knew at the time, meaning that we had recognized that we weren't collecting enough in charges to the departments to be able to recoup enough funding or revenue sources to cover what we're paying out for to operate the program. So if you look at before you get to the end of the second snippet, you'll see that we transferred into the fund $16.1 million. And those were the dollars to recoup costs to cover what we thought we were going to end in the fiscal year. So as you can see, we are change in net position at the end of fiscal year 23 is 13.7 million. We ended fiscal year 22 with a deficit of 1.3. And that's how we get the sum of those two is how we get to the $12.4 million. The third snippet is a cash flow statement, which presents the activities that get us to the, and I can't see that, the your screenshot, so I'm going to pull my own up, that backs into and gets us to how we get to a ending cash at the end of the fiscal year of 25 million. Okay. Does anyone have any questions on this slide?
So, Vivian, this is Keith. That $16 million transfer in, that was just a general fund transfer in. That's the trust funds now, and it wasn't, there's not a loan, there's nothing attached to that other than it's a transfer in that belongs to the risk trust now, and it's there.
That's correct. Now, not all of it is general fund, but the majority of the dollars or the amount makes is from the general fund. We did also transfer funding from the Water Utility Fund, the Environmental Services Fund, Park Tucson, TURF. So it was from a variety of sources, but the majority of that $16 million did come from the general fund.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And if I could say, I know that there might be kind of small, but if you wanted to follow along with the agenda items that I emailed out, we are now with item 4A, and then we're going to be touching base on 4B. Want me to put 4B, Vivian?
Yes, please.
I'll open this up because I didn't get to drop it into the PowerPoint last time.
Oh, yes, that was
so great. So this, Veronica, can you see this? This is not in the handout.
Yes, it should be one of the attachments, agenda items that I sent in an email.
Oh, okay.
Veronica, if you'd like, I can share my screen as well.
Okay, maybe that might be easier. Okay, that'll be easier. Let me exit out.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool.
There we go.
Okay.
Go ahead, Vivian.
Okay, all right, let me see. Okay. So does everyone see my screen? It's an Excel spreadsheet with the current year revenue or budget to actuals for the fund, the risk management fund. Veronica, do you see it?
I can see it.
Did someone have a question? I'm hearing like background. No. Okay. All right. So moving on. So this is where we stand as of the end of November of this fiscal year for the fund. This is a budget to actual comparison. So we continue to see positive net position in the fund as of November 30th, 2023. So if you look, we should be at about 46% of the budget from an actuals perspective. And we're about 38% on the revenue side. On the expenditure side, we're about 28% when we compare actuals to budget. Now, that may be because we may be getting bills at certain times during the fiscal year. So we may see by the end of the fiscal year that we may reach the 34.8 million, but that also depends on the claims that we pay out during the fiscal year as well. On the non-operating revenue and expenditure or expense side, property taxes, we've collected about $500,000 almost, or a little under $500,000. And we have investment income this fiscal year. So that may be derived from interest earnings or interest income. We did have a transfer in to the fund. We are planning to transfer dollars in to cover our public transit claims. So for the SunTrans, SunVan, and SunLink systems, up to this point at the end of November, we are seeing a positive net position for the year of $6.3 million. As you recall, when I presented the fiscal year 23 financial statements, the presentation of the financial statements showed that we were going to end the fiscal year, or we're ending the fiscal year, or we ended the fiscal year in 23 at 12.4 million. So once you add the 6.3 to the 12.4 million, we are at $18.7 million in the fund positive net position, which is great.
So then this is Keith again. Those are the actuals, are the actual 4 month numbers?
As of November 30th.
And the budget, those are the annual. We're seeing a comparison to the annual budget. Those haven't been adjusted for 5/12 of 1 year or anything, correct?
Correct.
That's the annual budget. Okay.
That's correct.
Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any questions? Angel?
No.
No? Okay. I saw your hand. Okay.
Oh, my hand was up. I'm sorry.
Yes. All right.
If that, Vivian, was that all?
That concludes the financial statement presentation part of the PowerPoint.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Unless there's any additional discussion or any questions from the trustees, we'll conclude agenda item 4. And then we'll move on to agenda item 5, the tort liability payment update. Angel, we'd love to take that over. That would be great.
Yes. All right. On an annual basis, the mayor and council adopt a budget that includes the recovery of involuntary tort payments as a component of the property tax, as a component of the primary property tax. Per Arizona state statute, the city has submitted to the State Property Tax Oversight Commission its request for the recovery of $806,128.53 in involuntary tort judgments. We're hoping to include that in our property tax primary property tax calculations for fiscal year 2025. We had about, I think, 24 claimants on that total. I think that's about it for that report.
Thank you. So I'm drawing what specific types of claims are made against the city that are allowed under the property tax reimbursement part? What is unusual or specific about these claims that allow us to assess a property tax to recover the cost?
Martha, you want to go ahead?
Yes, that'd be tort liability claims against the city valued over $20,000, where settlements occurred over $20,000.
Cool. Okay. Thank you. All right, then, unless there's any further questions or discussion on the tort liability payment update, I think it's great that we're allowed to recover that in that way. And now, Gail, I think we're coming to you with agenda item 6, our fiscal year 23 actuarial study that I received in the mail as a hard copy. Thank you very much.
Veronica, are you going to share the PowerPoint?
Yes, I'm going to pull it up right now. I try to have it ready before. Let's see. All right, bear with me one second. There he is. Okay.
There we go.
Can you see it okay?
I see it.
Okay, everyone sees it?
Yes.
All right.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, again. I'm just going to hit the high points of the actuarial review of the self-insurance program. And I don't mind questions as I go through, so please stop me if something's not making any sense at all, especially. Okay, this first slide, this is my introduction, which I've already given, so let's move on. The purpose of the actuarial study, there are several, but the primary purpose is to estimate the outstanding claim liability or the loss reserves as of, fiscal year end for workers' comp and liability. And you need that to for GASB compliance. And I saw those numbers in your financial statement, so I was happy to see them. Next slide. Some secondary purposes. We also project the cost of new claims that are going to occur in the next few years. And we recommend an allocation of claim costs to the departments. And finally, we try to estimate the cash needs for the next few years, which is pretty tough for liability sometimes, but we try. Next slide. An overview of the loss reserves. The biggest piece belongs to workers' comp indemnity, and then 25% for medical workers' comp, and then just 17% for the liability claims. Slide. Can you pay, Monica? Thank you. We always look at how the loss reserves have changed between valuations. And this year in total, you can see in the far right, there was a $3 million increase, which was 4.9%. And if you look up that column, it was all related to liability because it was very little change in the workers' comp reserve this year. Next slide. Okay, again, the workers' comp, very, very little change. Prior years developed favorably, meaning less than we expected, and that helped hold the reserve down and offset the new reserves coming in for 2023 claims. So it was sort of a non-event for workers' comp. Next slide. Liability, on the other hand, increased by over $3 million. And there were three accident years involved, 22. And there were particular claims that drove the increase, and that's a list just by claim number. As far as what we think claims will cost in future years, all claims that occur in the next 5 years, we think in 2023-24 that it will be just under $11 million, and then it will slowly increase. We would project and by 2027-28, it'll be just over $13 million. As far as cash flow, again, these are both workers' comp and liability combined. We were projecting $10.6 million for the current year, and then increasing to about $12.2 by 2027-28. Two graphs that show historically how the programs have behaved. The bar graph, this workers' comp indemnity, the bar graph shows the average claim year by year. And you can see the upward trend, which is what you would expect for workers' comp over time. There's an upward trend. The line graph, on the other hand, shows the claim frequency, the number of claims per 100 employees. And that has come down over time and is hanging around, you know, 1 to 1.2 per 100 employee at this point. This is workers' comp indemnity. Next slide. Here's the same thing for workers' comp medical. Again, you see the upward trend in the average claim, the bar graph, and the downward trend in the frequency. Liability is different. I don't really see, you can see the bad years, the 20 and 2022, the high severity. But I don't really see a trend in the liability claim severity. The frequency, though, has popped up a little bit over time, and it's now between, you know, 8 to 10 claims for every 100 employees. When we allocate the costs to department, or we recommend an allocation based on a combination of the number of employees in the department and the claims incurred over the past few years. And this is the allocation that we get for workers' comp, which is shows, you know, police and fire getting the biggest portions, and then smaller portions for water, environmental, parks and recreation. And then there's a pool, all other. I'm not sure how you allocate that internally. It's about 19% left over. Where there's no one department that's driving it, just a leftover piece for all other departments. For liability, same sort of thing. Police still getting the biggest share, but fire to a lesser extent now. So water, environmental, fire, and transportation getting about 10 to 12% each. And then parks and recreation gets about 4%, and then the leftover pool is about 15%. In terms of cost per employee, we think the workers' compensation program is costing $1,791 for each employee, and the liability $2,275. The workers' comp has decreased from last year, the cost per employee. Both the loss and the expense components came down a bit. Liability increased again because we put a higher loss component because of the development on the liability claims. The budgeted expenses, though, had come down. But overall, there was a $66 increase per employee on the liability allocation. If you look through the report, if you ever want to look through the report, you'll see that, you know, we're working at a very high level, that we're not looking at individual claims, really. We're looking at claims group by accident year and how they've behaved over time. Then we're discounting to allow for investment income, and we're suggesting margins in case you want to be a little more conservative with what you reserve. Excuse me. But everything that we do is an estimate, and there's a great deal of uncertainty. We admit it. Excuse me. Thank you.
Hi, Gail. So I did have one question. I almost stopped when we were on the slide. There's a change in loss reserve slide near the beginning. Probably 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 or slide 6 or 7? 2, there.
We go.
So that shows our estimated liability at 6/30/2023 of about $64 million. That's not discounted.
Correct.
So that's the amount. I shouldn't expect to see $64 million on the financial statements. The financial statements will have a smaller amount. It looks like right now I'm coming up with about $57 or $58 million. That would be The financial statements are showing a lower liability because of that discounting. Is that correct? Because we're not.
That's correct.
I saw that too. Time in the future.
Right.
Can I see the financial statement of discounted financial statement amount in the actuarial report somewhere?
Yes, you can. I can find the page for you. Let's see.
And is that, are we still using the 3% discount rate? Is that also?
Okay, I think you're using a higher confidence level because on page 4 of the report.
Okay.
The discounted expected is 48, about 49 million. And then at the 65% confidence level, it's about 65 million.
Got it. Expected confidence level. Okay. I will work with that. Thank you very much. And so then, Gail, I'm sorry, Gail, I have one more question. You provided us with information on estimated future claims with the intended use being to assess our rates to recover the right amount in the future. You're only providing us information for the liability, workers' comp, and the other one associated with workers' comp. You don't do any work with the city's expenses that are also included in those rates. Is that correct?
Those are provided to us. Budgeted expenses, and we include them in our allocation.
But you don't do any verification or any reasonability tests?
Not at all. No, we accept them as they are provided.
All right. Thank you very much.
Question?
Yes.
Gail, did you say that our administrative costs are included in the rates that you're proposing?
Yes, they are.
Okay, perfect. Thanks.
All right, I'm getting myself back organized here, sorry. At least semi-organized. Gail, so I'm assuming that was it for your formal presentation on item 6, the fiscal year 23 actuarial study. Am I hearing any other questions about Gail's wonderful actuarial study? If not, I think we can close that item out and move on to agenda item 7, which is the fiscal year 25 cost allocation recommendations. Did someone have a presentation relating to that, or did the city have a rate recommendation that we're going to get some explanation about for us to approve, or is that on me and the trustees to take over here?
I was presenting that as part of my presentation.
Thank you, Gail.
The cost per the department allocation, right?
Yes.
And then there's more detail in the study itself in your hard book.
I am seeing page 15 of the actuarial report on the schedule. Were you going, is that the page you wanted for, or do you have a page with the cost allocation on it?
There's a slide. There are these slides that show allocation. And excuse me.
Am I showing the right one, Gail?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay.
Let's see. I can show it in more detail.
Shall I pull up the actual report?
Yeah, you could pull up the report itself.
Okay.
I have printed out on my, from my actuarial report, I printed out page one of Appendix G and page one of Appendix H.
That would be,
those be the two allocations for us to concur with the recommendation as the trustees? Is that, or I'm trying to figure out what's the best document or way to frame this motion to have us concur with your recommendations as being good for the city and the trust fund.
I think that page, the first page of Appendix G and
Appendix H.
Those are the ones that summarize it by department.
Okay. I don't have an actual page number from the report, but it's near the back. Well, you're going to have to scroll through a lot, I think, to get there.
Here we go.
Okay.
Almost there. This one here, right?
There it is, yes.
Let me rotate it here.
Perfect.
Oops, I'm just gonna... Oh no, I lost it.
Keep going.
Here we go. Okay. This is the right page, correct?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So then, Gail, from what I understand, this shows the loss allocation that you're recommending based on prior loss history for the various departments. This is the workers' compensation, medical, and indemnity combined, showing $4.9 million total allocation in our current year among those departments. There's also the city provided expense cost that was also allocated similarly across those departments based on prior claim history, I imagine. Then there's the total loss and expense coming to that $7.5 million. That would be the allocation to the various departments for fiscal year 24-25. You can see a comparison to the prior year. Actually smaller amounts. I believe you covered that in your presentation for workers' comp, medical, indemnity than the prior year. So the allocation amount is smaller. I think the allocation among the departments is relatively consistent from year to year. So this would be your recommendation for how to allocate costs to the department to keep the trust fund financially sound in fiscal year 24-25 to the best of our predictive abilities. Yes, given the confidence interval that we're selecting here, which is I think in the 50% range, so we're just as likely to be right as we are wrong, or to underestimate as we are to overestimate. We're right in the middle. Is that correct?
Yes, this is the midpoint estimate, the expected.
Okay. And then Appendix H, if we can. And I'm sorry, Gail, did you want to do this, or am I stepping on your toes by talking about this a little bit in advance of our motion?
Not at all. And you're not coughing, so that's good. Keep going.
If we could go to Appendix H, page one of that also, that would be great. You might have to flip that.
What page on H?
Page one of eight on H.
Okay.
It looked like it was 94 on the scan document.
So then this chart, page one of appendix eight, does the same thing for the liability estimate. You can see in the first column there, there's the $4.8 million loss estimate for fiscal year 24-25 split across the various departments based on their historical or predicted amount of loss typical for that department. So you can see the police gets the largest allocation, and that seems reasonable to me. There's the department's expense allocation then, $4.7 million allocated to liability for their cost in taking care of these claims. Total column, $9.6 million allocated for liability. There's a comparison to the prior year. You can see a dollar change. We're also allocating a smaller amount this year than last year for, I'm sorry, in 24-25 than we allocated in 24. And I'm not sure what else to explain about these. So then these combined would be the two recommended cost allocations that the actuary is recommending, and that I'm assuming that the department is concurring with, and they seem reasonable and in line with everything we've done in the past and the information that's presented to us in the future, or presented to us today about the future. So I would like at this point to entertain a motion to provide our trustee board recommendation and concurrence with these rates to allocate the expected costs of risk for the city across all of the departments for fiscal year 24-25. Is there a motion to that effect that someone wishes to make?
I move approval of the motion, Michael Hanley.
So Michael Hanley has moved approval of Appendix G and Appendix H, page one on the actuarial study, indicating what the expected loss allocation for both liability and medical and indemnity combined allocated amongst the departments for fiscal year 24-25, as shown on Appendix G and Appendix H. Do we have a second for that motion?
Second. Angel.
That was Angel. We have a second from Angel. Is there any discussion or debate about this motion for approving these rates for 24-25 to allocate risk costs to the various departments within the city?
Yes, I have a question, Gail. Vivian, I believe, noted, about 17, Vivian, correct me if I'm wrong, $17 million of fund balance. What if the city should say, because we have a fund balance, we will not allocate these full amounts in fiscal 23? Where would that put us? Would ballpark? Or how would you respond to that? Let me make it a little easier.
I would say that's risky, but if you want to do that, you just need to tell me how much you to bring down the balance, right? We could, these estimates that are in the allocation, they're sort of bottom line estimates. So at that point, we probably couldn't professionally recommend that you budget less than this, but you can certainly make the decision yourself to do so. And if you want me to help you come up with an amount, I can do that. But I probably couldn't, put in my report that you should do that.
So, Vivian, I don't know if you have an answer. Having served the city for a few years, has the city ever allocated the recommendations?
Yes. So Allie's provided these exact appendix pages for us to set our rates to recover the recommended loss allocations and the expense allocation.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
And this is Keith. I can state for other trust funds I've been involved in, we've had some consultants give us opinions for, it was health benefit and health costs, not liability projections, but I'm thinking back to other reasonable amounts of reserves to be held. Our reserve that we have right now is about $12 million, right? So that's the projected amount with a $20 million annual operating costs I was seeing on the financial statements. That's only 6 or 7 months of operating costs. That doesn't seem like an out of line reserve to have, especially when we're using the expected 50% confidence interval to project our future costs. I would share the actuary's reservations at suggesting that that cushion is large enough to not allocate the full amount of these costs to the department to recover the fund's costs. So I guess I'm just saying this to support Gail's comments, if that's helpful.
The question was not with the intent to not allocate as recommended. It was just simply should the question come up when we discuss these numbers further with management.
Okay. Cool. Is there any further discussion or questions about the recommended cost allocations on Appendix G and Appendix H in the actuary's report? I'm not hearing any, so I would like to call a vote on the motion. The motion is to approve and recommend to the city the rates for fiscal year 24-25. For workers' compensation, both medical and indemnity combined, on Appendix G in the actuarial report, and the liability allocation recommendations on Appendix H for fiscal year 24-25, also from the actuary's report. All in favor of that motion to support and recommend these rates, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed to supporting and recommending these rates as provided by the actuary for 24-25? I'm going to call the result of the motion to be accepted and adopted, and I would love to have that recorded in the minutes. Thank you very much, everyone. That takes care of agenda item 7. We're moving on to agenda item 8, the investment committee report, the PFM presentation. Annette, if you're ready and available, that would be great.
Yes, thank you. I'll go ahead and share my screen. I'll just make sure this comes through okay.
I can see it.
Great, thank you. All right, so we have the third quarter report here as we are partly just about finished up with fourth quarter here. So I'll speak to a little bit of that as well. But jumping into the report, this is, of course, for the Self-Insurance Risk Trust Fund. Total market value at the end of third quarter was $44.1 million. There was a little bit of cash in the portfolio, which is typical at the end of a quarter. We'll allow a little bit of that to accumulate and then redeploy that. As far as the overall effective duration of the portfolio, so this is a 1 to 5 year
benchmark that we manage this portfolio to. The longest that you can invest out per state statute is 5 years. So the effective duration of this portfolio for all of the securities currently held at the end of third quarter was just over 2.5 years at 2.52 years. Now we look at that in comparison to the benchmark at 2.5 years. And the way that we think about that is with where rates are at in the overall market, with what's going on, our projection going forward is that we really peaked out with where rates were at throughout the year. And the expectation going into next year is that rates are likely to come down. So considering where we're at in fourth quarter, we've already started to see some of this take place. So we were longer to the benchmark. And in a falling rate environment, we want to be slightly longer. So we saw a lot of that take place at the end of third quarter. So that's evident here in that comparison between the portfolio duration of 2.52 years and that benchmark. So we'll look to stay very much in line with where the benchmark effective duration is, and we'll likely stay right in line with that over the course of the next few quarters. Now, looking at the yield at cost, that was at 3.68%. So as we've continued to reposition the overall portfolio, we had some securities as they shortened in duration. Some of the yields that were on those securities were a lot less than what we could get in the overall market. So over the last few quarters, we've really repositioned the portfolio to deploy some of that cash that was shortening, getting ready to mature into some of those longer maturing securities. We were able to capture some higher value, help drive return in the overall portfolio, yet still maintain that safety, liquidity, and then return is really that third component. But we were able to continue to diversify the overall portfolio. So I'll kind of speak to what that looks like currently. And then that yield at market at 5.16%, very much reflective of the overall market environment. So the way I like to describe that is if we were to sell off the entire portfolio at the end of September, not that we would, that's not prudent. However, that yield at market would be yielding about 5.16%. So we can see what we are able to get out in the market. And that's really what we're capturing is we're rebalancing the portfolio at the end of each month and really at the end of each quarter. So the goal and the hope is this yield at cost will down the road surpass that yield at market, which means that yield at market has dropped and the portfolio is still holding on to securities for the next few years that are yielding a lot more than what we can get in the overall market. Now, talking a little bit about diversification in the overall portfolio. So this portfolio remains very well diversified across permitted sectors. And I think one of the important components as well is to focus in on the diversification within each of those sectors. So yes, very well diversified across those government sectors, U.S. Treasuries, agencies. Agency CMBS is a sector that we've added more to over the course of this last quarter as there's been some opportunity there. And then supranationals, which also rolls up under government securities. Now, negotiable CDs, corporates, ABS, that's where we get into some of those credit sectors. And all of these are permitted by state statute. So we are very much governed by state statute. There is an investment policy in place as well that further oversees this portfolio. And all of these are permitted. But when we look at that diversification across the permitted sectors, again, looking at corporate specifically, there's even further diversification within this sector. So it really is a combination of financials, healthcare, industrials, utility. And I think one of the things I always like to point out as well is per the policy, there is a 5% issuer limit. So we cannot exceed an investment beyond 5% within any single issuer when it comes to these credit sectors. And if we look at where these individual issues are, our own internal issuer limit is in fact a bit more conservative. We really try to not exceed 2% within any specific issuer. So very evident here when we kind of look at some of those big names and those holdings that issuer limit within the overall portfolio for these securities that are held is still very much under that 5% limit, but also still under our internal limit of 2%. So I just kind of wanted to point that out as well. Now, looking at the trailing 12 months, what's changed in the overall portfolio? So, of course, the market environment has been very different since the start of the year. You know, we're focusing on what's going on in the market. What is the Fed focusing on? What's the expectation as we wrap up the year and really look into 2024? So as we're kind of rebalancing the portfolio, we're looking at redeploying some of that cash, that shortening in duration, a couple of things took place. So treasuries we really look at is the gold standard in the overall portfolio. They're the safest, most liquid asset class. So we tend to heavily favor treasuries quite a bit. Throughout the course of the year, we started to reduce that allocation in favor of corporates, agency, CMBS specifically, as well as ABS. And the reason for that is that those spreads, that value between a treasury and those sectors provided a lot of opportunity. So when we're invested in a treasury, we really look at that as the dry powder in the overall portfolio because it is such a liquid asset class, because we have flexibility to sell in that portfolio and really look at some additional opportunities. We've been able to drive overall return, still maintain that safety and that liquidity component. And once that's been met, now we've looked at some additional opportunities in value, and we were able to find that really in the corporate sector as well as ABS. So we feel very comfortable in both of those sectors. What I will say is, as we're starting to wrap up the end of the year here, what's been interesting is end of September, early October, we really saw this de-risking take place in the overall market. So as a result, some of those credit sectors had widened out a bit. So for fourth quarter, we continued to take advantage of that, redeploy some of those assets into those sectors, and also extend duration a bit longer. And now when we look at even just most recently where the yield curve has been, because of this flight to quality, we're seeing investors really look for fixed income as more of a safe haven. Yields have dropped drastically. So even when we look at fourth quarter and we take a look at this report, there's been quite a bit of price appreciation already due to the fact that we started this several months ago. So one of the questions, of course, that I've gotten quite a bit over the course of the last few months is, you know, well, why don't we stay a bit shorter? Why don't we just put everything in a 6 month, a 9 month, something under a year? Well, you know, we managed to more of a long-term disciplined approach, and we've also been repositioning the portfolio with the expectation that the Fed has alluded to the fact that rates are likely to drop next year. So that's on the horizon. So we started that process quite a bit ago, and now that those yields have dropped, we've already seen significant price appreciation in the portfolio for this fourth quarter. So, you know, we did the bulk of the work in this third quarter, but just getting an idea of how that has changed over these last 12 months, it's just interesting to see. Now, this looks at the portfolio activity for this last quarter, well, third quarter, and what we purchased. So again, agency CMBS, about $1.6 million in as far as net activity there. Asset-backed securities, we had a few sales and maturities in that sector. We decided to add a little bit more, again, as those spreads had offered quite a bit of value. We were fairly heavily weighted in treasuries, so we had the flexibility to look at some of these additional credit sectors. And then when it comes to corporates, looking to maintain that overall allocation. So what I will say is we've reached our target limit overall when it comes to corporates. And for some of those spreads that have come in and tightened up quite a bit, especially in this fourth quarter, you know, we've redeployed some of that back into treasuries. But for third quarter, we've really reached those target allocations. So going forward, we're going to look to maintain that current allocation, very much what we see here as far as what was coming due in maturities and what we reallocated into that sector, but not looking to add in any significant way. We're not going to see this huge jump from what's currently in the portfolio and then in fourth quarter, you know, an additional 5 to 6%. We've really reached where we want to be overall, especially as we wrap up the end of the year. When it comes to corporate specifically, those issuers tend to shore up their balance sheets. There's not as much opportunity in the overall market. So we captured a lot of what we wanted to do in third quarter. And then same with negotiable CDs. I always like to think of those as a nice bridge between some of those securities that are shorter in duration. Corporates tend to be a bit longer, as well as ABS. Those kind of fall in a 3 to 5 year duration is with most of their issuance. So negotiable CDs are kind of a nice bridge and balance between the two of those opposite ends of the spectrum there. Now, looking at overall portfolio performance, so the portfolio returned 33 basis points for this last quarter right here, and the benchmark was at 23 basis points. So the benchmark is really an agnostic set of data points that we track against the overall portfolio to give us an idea. Because the portfolio has credit in it, such as corporates, ABS, negotiable CDs, things of that nature, we're able to drive a little more return overall. And because it's also actively managed, we're making moves in the market on an ongoing basis. We're rebalancing on a monthly basis to make sure that, one, we're maintaining overall duration within that 1 to 5 year, which we saw, but also as some of these securities are shortening in duration, what are the opportunities available? We're able to be selective in what we're adding into the overall portfolio, making sure that we're meeting the overall policy, that we're meeting the metrics of the benchmark and where the portfolio tends to be. But this portfolio, again, you know, very much managed to safety, liquidity, and then return in that order. And if we look at overall return, the portfolio has done fairly well. Even if we look at this 1 year return, the inception date for this portfolio was June 30 of 2019. So we're starting to get a full few market cycles of overall performance. But even in this last year, of course, with some of the volatility we experienced, we saw some strong outperformance. And then the 3 year number, of course, that longer term, this was coming out of the pandemic. So some of those securities that were purchased during the pandemic, those are what we're seeing shorten in duration. So that's what we're redeploying out a bit further. And when we looked at that yield at market earlier on in the presentation at over 5%, that's what we're looking to purchase, as some of those have matured and rolled off of the portfolio. Now we can replace those with some higher value securities overall. And then looking at the overall earnings in the portfolio, so for this last quarter, $215,000. And for the last year, $849,000. So some strong earnings. And again, this is through September 30th. So even once we get through this full year, seeing what those overall earnings have looked like, and we're going to see those continue to grow. So that yield at cost, when we looked at that, is very strong. And that really helps drive a lot of that overall return. So over the course of the next 1, 2, and 3 years, we're going to see these earnings really continue to grow. Because if we think back, even just the last 3 years, at $1.5 million in earnings, that's through a zero rate environment, through a pandemic, through volatility, geopolitical issues, a number of things. So now that we actually have a market environment that we have and had not seen in several years, we've really been able to capture a lot of value and add to that overall earnings in the portfolio. I'm just going to pause here. I know that was quite a bit, but I just want to see if there are any questions regarding the portfolio or anything in general.
Hi, Annette. This is Keith. I have a couple questions. Easy and basic ones, I think. This graph right on the screen right now shows an inception date of July 1 or June 30th of 19. The Risk Management Trust has existed for longer than that. This is just when you took over managing the portfolio for us. Is that, that's not the inception of the trust. That's when we started with you. Is that correct?
You are absolutely correct. Prior to that, this was actually managed in-house. So this was the inception date of when PFM started actively managing the portfolio.
Perfect. This is also a separate trust with only the city's risk management funds in it. We are not commingled or pooled with any other funds of the city or other governments or others that you're investing. This is one trust, one investment. We're standalone by ourselves, correct?
That's correct. It's sole and separate. So it's not commingled with, you know, for instance, like a workers' comp or something along those lines.
Great. Gail and the actuarial study look at what our liability is now and what our liability is in the future. And coupled with that are cash projections and when cash is needed to pay those liabilities. I'm making the assumption, and I just want it confirmed or not confirmed, that you're getting those cash needs and how you're investing and the timelines you're investing on. The cash needs of our trust are taken into account in making those investing decisions?
So when we first created the portfolio, we looked at and did a projection based on that. And as a result, this portfolio had the ability to be even more of a longer duration. But with what some of those current cash needs are, I think it would be helpful to have those maybe on a semi-annual basis, just making sure that a lot of the investments align with any of those upcoming maturities. I know we don't have anything on the horizon, but when we initially ran the estimate, we did allocate the portfolio according to that. But I think it would just be good to make sure that if there's any changes, you know, I would welcome receiving it maybe on a semi-annual basis, and I can work with the portfolio manager in case there's anything that did change that, and just keep it on our radar.
Cool. Thank you.
Absolutely. Great question.
And then one more, I'm probably going to ask this every time I talk to you. The state has laws about what we're allowed to invest in and not allowed to invest in. And the city has a very specific separate investment policy for what we're allowed to invest in and not allowed to invest in. All of the activities since the last time we've seen you and everything we're invested in now, are they fully compliant with both state law and the city's investment policy governing our trust?
Yes, absolutely. So per state statute, that's Arizona State Revised Statute 35323. So that's what oversees any public monies in the state of Arizona. Then beyond that, just as you mentioned, there is the city's investment policy, which further governs the portfolio. So even if there's something more conservative or different based on that, we always go by the policy because that's what we're managing to. And I think to your question, I actually have another slide, which is the certificate of compliance.
Wow, okay.
So I was like, oh, that's right. I do. I have one more. So yes, we do make sure to, we actually code it in our system. So that way, it's not like we can go out in the market and purchase something that's not allowable. So we make sure that we physically code that, and it will red flag, but it won't even let us proceed if that's the case.
Perfect. Thank you very much for all the
Absolutely.
Work you've done and entertaining my questions.
Wonderful.
Annette, I have a question.
Great.
Going back to Vivian's unaudited fiscal 23 ACPA, we have cash and cash equivalent of 24.6. Now, I'm thinking, Vivian, that includes both workers' comp and the risk fund. Annette, tell me how that stands in relation to your investment portfolio. Because we have 24, we have 43 as of June, of course, in long-term investments and 24 in cash and cash equivalent. How much of that cash and cash equivalent are you holding? Or should that be a Vivian question? I don't know.
I think that might be a Vivian question, because as far as the cash that we're, that it would be reflected, it's just 57,000.
Right.
But I want to make sure I'm not missing anything.
So let me, I'm going to share my...
Oh, yes. I'll stop sharing here.
Yeah. So do you see the financial statements, Angel, the unaudited? Did I put up, bring up the correct ones? Because I'm working on two sets here.
Yes, you do.
So here, this, you're talking about this, Angel, versus this?
Yes.
So this is the, these are the dollars we have as part of what I believe Annette is presenting.
Okay.
That's correct.
And where do we have the 24.6?
Oh, whatever. We don't, that's part of the pool. That's sitting in the pooled cash account.
Gotcha. So we have 24.6 sitting in ordinary cash account.
Correct.
But they're invested in short-term instruments?
This piece, no. So this was at the time when we started to establish this long-term investment, Angel, this was a much smaller amount. But because in fiscal year 23, we transferred over $16 million, this amount grew.
Okay. So that means we have to revisit our cash flow, Annette.
Correct.
So we could determine how much of that needs to be moved into long-term investment.
Correct.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, let me unshare. Okay, there.
That is all that I had. I did include an economic update at the back, just more for additional information. But that's everything that I had as far as the overall portfolio presentation.
Thank you, Annette. We appreciate it. Are there any other questions for Annette? All right. Thank you again. We can move on to agenda item. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, nothing. I just said my pleasure.
Oh, thank you. New business, agenda item 9. We have 3 items there. The first one is a staff update. I'm not seeing presenter information attached to these. I'm not sure who's.
I'll go ahead and start. This is Vince. I'll go ahead and start with the safety group. We had been fully staffed a little over an entire year. I just had one of my employees get promoted to another department. So we had an open position for a promotional opportunity within our division. We did interviews last week and we made an offer for a promotion to one of our safety specialists to a safety and environmental compliance specialist. We made the offer today. The safety specialist position was also posted knowing that we were going to have a promotion and it closed today. And those interviews should be the week of January 9th. So right now I'm just short one staff, and that would be from the safety and health.
I think there was an item attached in the documentation for the meeting, item 9A, a organization chart for the risk management division. Did we want to put that up, and did any, thank you very much, Vince. Are the other divisions going to go through a similar analysis and introduction for their departments?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Martha Castro, Liability Claims Manager, and we thankfully are fully staffed now as of July 10th, and we were able to add an additional claims adjuster to keep with the claim load. And so we have 2 new claims adjusters, David Sanchez and Keisha Prajan. They both come from auto property losses. And so they've come in nicely and hit the ground running. So I'm very thankful to have 2 seasoned claims adjusters to come in and start learning the city processes, but they jumped in. And so I'm very thankful. I just took a lot of pressure off from our existing staff.
Thank you,
Veronica. Did you need to find the organization chart? You're muted.
Are you able to see? Oh, no, can't see that.
Not yet.
Where did it go? There we go. Can you see it now?
Yes.
Okay.
So here's our updated org chart. And then just to put face to the name, we have our new claims adjusters here. And then as Vince mentioned, we are pending our compliance specialist, and we'll have that person in there soon. And then once we have that person in, as Vince mentioned as well, we're going to have a safety specialist, which is open currently. So we'll be moving people there. But David Sanchez and Keisha Prejean, they are up here on the screen. They are the two new claims adjusters. That's our new org chart. Okay, and I think that's all right, Martha.
Yes.
One of the biggest changes is that the workers' compensation program moved from the Human Resources Division back to the risk management actual physical location with Risk Management BSD on July 1st. So our program is back aligned with our fund.
Yes, thank you, Sarah. And we did list that here on the org chart as well. So we do have them here with us. So as far as item 9B or 8, staff updates, that's what we had.
Cool. Thank you. I'm sorry, I was muted. Hey, Sarah, so you and Workers' Comp, do we have a third-party contractor that processes the claims? You coordinate that processing with the third party for all of the City of Tucson's claims. Is that what that unit's doing?
You're muted, Sarah. That is correct. We just renewed went through an RFP process in July and have re-awarded to TriStar Risk Management. So we have been with them for 5 years, and then we just re-upped again with our RFP. So they manage all the, or we pay them and they pay all of our claims for us. So
thank you.
Yes. And we have been working with Mary Wells at the Mahoney Group. So she has been doing, we've done a cost benefit analysis of this program. She's also helped us and provided guidance in some of our RFPs that we're working on.
Thank you. Looking at the org chart, there was a vacant position in the risk management administrator, and item new business 9B is a risk management administrator recruitment update. Do we have an update on that?
Yes. Unfortunately, we have been unable to place someone in this position. We have made two offers. The first offer was made 7 months ago. We met the candidate at the salary level that she required, but there were other concessions she wanted the city to make that the city was unable to agree to. We also carried on and identified another candidate, but he was in the private sector and felt that the salary that was being offered was not sufficient for him to be pressed to leave his current position. So I have asked the HR department to locate a recruiter that we could utilize, whose services we could utilize to get us moving in the right direction in this recruitment.
Cool. Thank you. Item 9C, new business calendar year 23 trust meeting dates. We're talking about next year, calendar year 24 trust meeting dates. Is that where we're going to go?
Yes.
And is that an item someone was going to talk about, or is that on me?
I think that one was just like a tickler that we do meet annually, unless there's other items that need to be discussed. They're special meetings, so it's just kind of a tickler item there, I believe.
There is an item that we should probably meet on before then, maybe before March 1st. I believe March 1st is the date that the plan administrator's report is due to mayor and council. And I think the trust board has to have some input or review in that process. So I don't know if the department is preparing that annual report for mayor and council, and if we can just send that to the trust boards for their review and comment before it goes to mayor and council, if that complies with our requirements, or if we actually need a meeting to discuss and approve it, I'm not sure, but is anyone working on the plan administrator's annual report to mayor and council? We should maybe get started on that, and there's a chance we need a February meeting before our next year November or December meeting to discuss the rates. So I will leave that up to you guys. Maybe I'll get in touch with people after the meeting. And just as an alert to the trustees, maybe our first meeting with Allie will be scheduled for February to go over that annual meeting to mayor and council.
Okay, and we can sidebar also, and I can make sure to schedule a meeting.
Okay. I am comfortable with our annual meeting schedule in late November, December to go over rates and only meeting as needed. If anything else comes up before then, do any of the other trustees have any differing thoughts or discussions or questions about our schedule? Okay.
Just to clarify, my term expires in March of next year. Is that correct? This is Mike Lamb.
I looked at an old document that had March of 2024 as your expiration date, yes.
Okay. Just to clarify, thank you.
That might be an item.
Everyone is hoping and willing that you'll say yes to another appointment, Michael, so maybe keep that in your mind.
Yes, I was going to say that might be an item here upcoming soon. Since March is around the corner.
Right.
All right. Any other discussion from anyone on any of those items, A, B, and C, for new business number 9? If not, we can move on to item number 10, call to the audience. This would be the point where anyone in the audience that would like to speak and be heard about any issues, now would be the time. I am not seeing or hearing any members of the public that would like to speak at this time, so we'll move on to agenda item 11, future agenda items. The annual report will probably be a future agenda item if we need to have a public meeting to discuss that report based on what the city code and our trust policies say. I'm not aware of it. Does anyone else have any suggested future agenda items to go through at our next meeting or two? I'm not seeing or hearing any there either. I would just like to thank everyone for their participation, all of the city employees that put hard work into helping our trust work well, to the trustees that sit and help with oversight, and to all of our providers and consultants. Thank you very much also. I hope everyone has a great holiday season, and I guess I'll say goodbye and ready to call this meeting to adjourn. We did great time-wise. Thank you very much, everyone, for an efficient and wonderful meeting. We'll see you all next time.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.